Welcome back, folks, on this Thursday, the 9th day of November, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. I didn't do a news show yesterday because I actually had a dentist appointment. It takes months to get those nowadays in a post-constitutional dictatorship, especially if you're picky about having things put into your mouth like mercury and fluoride. And as it turns out, it was a total waste of time anyway. But in hindsight, maybe it was a good day to miss. Now that the dust has settled at least a bit, but the smoke has gotten thicker than ever from what was called an election on Tuesday, we can start to ask the question, well, what does the election tell us? And the answer, nothing. If you've been paying attention, you knew it was those who count the votes that matter, not those who think that they're actually voting for something. But what the Ministry of Truth is telling us that the election is telling us speaks volumes. Are people concerned about an invasion at the non-existent southern border, or that the military-aged men coming across by the tens of thousands may have mayhem or terrorism in mind? Not so as you'd notice. About the biggest debt bubble and imminent largest economic meltdown in human history? Well, it seems they haven't noticed that either. But I guess when it comes to World War III already in progress and Civil War II building towards an explosive climax, they seem to be just fine with that, even if they haven't figured out that their sons and daughters now are soon going to be sent off to die for it. Somewhere else, of course. But none of that seems to have really mattered to people who thought their votes were going to go out and fix something, at least anything that needed fixing. Because it was a real good night for Democrats, chortled the headlines of all the major waystream news outlets. And let's do just a brief sample on that score to show you what I'm talking about. Republicans thought, say some of the stories, that they could get voters to flip the socialist Senate and expand their majority in the House of Delegates in Virginia. Oh, so sorry. Well, maybe not really. The Daily Mail headline puts it this way. Glenn Youngkin was stunned in Virginia, it says, as Democrats flipped the House and retained control of the Senate. Republican touted as White House candidate, not anymore though, suffers a crushing blow on his home turf as, ready for this? Here's the narrative du jour today. Abortion rights take center stage at the ballot box, or at least those that are talking about who's counting the votes at the ballot box. Which isn't even a box anymore, folks. Think about it. It's just an internet-connected socialist media platform, even more censored than Two Facebook or Wikipedia. The ballots literally aren't worth the paper they're printed on, but how would you know? And the box itself looks more now like a photocopier. The Virginia result says the story was part of an overall good night. As a matter of fact, folks, an unbelievably good night, if you think about it, for the Democrats. I think it's fair now to say the Uniparty, a.k.a. the far-left progressives, which saw Kentucky's tyrannical scumbag governor, their own Mr. Lockdown, Andy Beshear, win re-election and abortion rights preserved in the so-called red state of Ohio. And all of this, they say, well, because Democrats put abortion rights at the center of their campaigns. Which is ironic because it's essentially the only right that anybody has left anymore. Well, unless, of course, you invade a once free country for the purpose of sucking at the public teat. Or for that matter, and I guess you could make a pretty good case on this score, and we'll see this soon enough, killing the natives. I guess, folks, if it's not obvious, when you look at the destruction of a nation and all of the things that are not only going wrong, but that have been engineered to take the country down, I can't see that anybody with even a fourth of a brain, that's half of a half, of course, if you're not public school educated, would see abortion rights as anywhere close to the top of a list of important issues. Unless maybe you put it right up there with fisting in the public cesspools and subsidizing a tranny military. Evidently, they need somebody around to turn over the keys when the CCP finally hoists the communist hammer and sickle over the White Whorehouse. After the election chicanery that we're kind of getting used to at this point, what some still aren't getting used to is how you're not allowed to talk about it, but don't worry, that's coming. We had report after report after report from various jurisdictions about votes getting flipped, the usual ballot box stuffing. And a couple days back, one even accidentally got shown on CNN. Oops, let's cut to commercial. Intimidation at the polls, some of that even got recorded and then went viral up on the web, and electronic vote flipping to boot. Let's just do a sample of those headlines to kind of balance the scales here. The Gateway Pundit is among those, along with Alex Jones and Infowars.com, reporting that several voting machines in multiple districts across, for example, Pennsylvania were flipped and had to issue emergency paper ballots, which is what they should have done to begin with, due to, quote, votes getting flipped and not recording properly on their voting machines. Northampton County Executive Lamont McClure was clearly frustrated about the so-called problems at the polls and told local reporters at Lehigh Valley News, "I'm livid at the election folks and ES&S. Uh-oh, wonder if they'll sue him because ES&S, standing for Election Systems and Software, sick, Express Vote XL machines were used in those rigged elections. Oops, did I say that? Well, let's just say questionable elections. It's always that way, folks, when you see votes getting flipped. And isn't it interesting? They always seem to get flipped from the R column to the D column. What are the odds? And isn't that so amazingly consistent? And, oh yeah, also from the life column to the death column, as we're being told in some cases this year. And as we've also seen, at least for a little while up online, voters even caught some of those switches being flipped in real time, right there. And again, always in that same curious direction.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
And you know what? It's not that election interference is all that new. You can find it going on for at least decades, if not longer, certainly in the United States. Most people will think of Cook County in 1960 when John F. Kennedy, who probably was more honest than anybody that's been running in the last decade or two, beat Tricky Dick Nixon to become president with the help of a whole bunch of dead folks there. We know who his number two was waiting in the wings then, and we know what happened soon thereafter. But they certainly did a better job of covering that up for half a century or so. Now they don't even really try. They just cram it down your throats and double dog dare you to point out what's been going on. It's so obvious, unless you're a blithering idiot, you can't miss it. And you've, yep, certainly got a right to kill babies, but you do not have a right to talk about that. But I think what really bugs me this time around is the number of so-called conservatives, people who've seen through it in times past, that are now just simply drinking the Kool-Aid and rolling over for it. I won't name all of the names. One that I was really surprised by, though, is a fellow engineer who's also a talk show host and has had a pretty good following for a number of years. Like your host, he has a sordid past with a history of party politics and involvement in libertarian issues. But yeah, I was surprised to see him drinking the Waystream Media Kool-Aid, as if the rigged election results were somehow what the Waystream Media was really claiming they were. Some kind of a referendum on the God-given right to, no, not keep and bear arms, but take the arms and legs off of little kids. Especially if they were cut out of a womb early. I know this fella knows enough about engineering and statistics in particular to recognize when the fix is in and the big lie's going full tilt boogie, but in the heat of the moment, I guess he forgot some of that. What we saw wasn't a referendum, it's a con job, and it's still in progress. Case in point, at the so-called debate for the also-rans in the Republican nomination, Nikki Newcomb-Haley, a true slime rhino if there ever was one, quote, secured loud applause, says the Daily Mail summary, as she used the third Republican debate to call for a consensus and civility in the key election debate over, you know it, abortion. The former South Carolina governor said Republicans needed to be, quote, realistic on the issue, and says the coverage refused to support a federal 15-week ban on abortion, which takes the propaganda right back to the main narrative. The debate, it says, came a day after Republicans lost control of the Virginia legislature. Oh, yeah, gotta believe it. For that very reason, nothing to do with anything else, where a key plank of the party's campaign had been that proposed 15-week ban. Cue the smoke and ignore the elephant in the room. Doesn't matter what you debate about, what you care about, because the only thing that matters is if you're all focused on votes that aren't going to get counted and issues that'll be spun as the excuse for what they plan on doing anyway. While your country's being invaded, your future is being destroyed, and your kids are being taken off to be, literally, sacrificed on the altar of Molech in some other place, I'll say it as kindly as I can, you don't have a prayer. One more quick comment to make the exact same point. Here's a literal direct quote from Rick Wiles of True News, who unfortunately was also drinking the same Kool-Aid. Also accepting, it would seem, that the Virginia election was all about so-called abortion rights. The Democrats, he said, campaigned on the issue of killing babies, and they won. The voters said they want more baby killing, and he added, and we want politicians who will support our right to kill our children. Folks, he continued, you can't have this any other way. A majority of the people who voted Tuesday said, we want the right to kill our children. Now, here's the point. He may or may not be right. We are, after all, talking about someplace pretty blankety-blank close to the swamp. And I have no doubt there are a whole lot of people there that really are jonesing to kill anything and everything they can. They want to cut the genitalia off little boys, the breasts off little girls, so they're no doubt anxious to kill kids, too, any way they can. We've seen that, no doubt about it. But It's a far cry from that to assume that the election actually reflects anything of the sort, or that the people who voted actually had their votes counted, or have anything to do with the spin that's being reported in the waste-stream media. And that's my point. And if they did it back in 2020 and got away with it and literally rubbed your noses in it and then persecuted the guy who actually won the election and are even pre-rigging this next election in ways they wouldn't have dared to, say in 2016, and took as many of his supporters as they could get away with and threw them in the Soviet-style gulags to boot, and nobody has even so much as raised a hand about that, and then they got away with it again in 2022, so how much more this time on November 7th, 2023, when so few people are even daring to speak up about what's so obvious? And now the focus is, oh, well, let's analyze the reasons why all of these people voted, or did they, in the way that seems to be so contrary to what you might expect, given all the really nasty stuff that's going on that isn't making waves as far as the waste stream is concerned. Most of America, and indeed the world, has now been conditioned to the deep state, to the ministry of truth, to the ministry of love, and all the other totalitarian crap that Orwell warned about in 1984, and they can't even see it. And I do have to make one more point here. Am I saying that the election was rigged and it's categorically undeniable? Well, I would say it's statistically undeniable, but can you prove it in a court of law? Will you even be allowed to talk about it on Twitter or to Facebook? You know the answer to that. Besides which, we don't have courts of law anymore, folks. We haven't, and that's part of the problem. I can't help but think back to what John F. Kennedy once said. It should have been famous, but no longer seems to be taught in the public schools. Those who would make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And I have no doubt, I'll say it again, that that is precisely the goal of the deep state swamp critters who are pushing so hard in that direction and making sure that they make any kind of peaceful revolution impossible. And that means especially at the ballot box. Remember the four boxes in a free society? Soap, ballot, jury, and cartridge, used in this order? Well, they have managed systematically at this point to destroy all four of them. The Biden viewers putting the last wooden stake in that final box, even as we speak. And by the way, will it make a difference if you vote against it? No! Because they won't count it anyway. And that was the point of the Second Amendment, if you remember what it was supposed to be about. And those four boxes in a free society explicitly make that point. So with all that on the table, what am I really trying to say about the election? Answer, we have known for a long time, we've known since certainly 2020, that this was precisely the path that was going to be taken. Why is anybody even remotely surprised at this? And why are so-called conservatives literally drinking the Kool-Aid and saying, we have to analyze the abortion situation and pay all kinds of attention to the message that the electorate is sending? The elector isn't going to be allowed to send a message, folks. And this is the other thing that I want to make sure people understand. I'll say it again. Can we prove that the election was rigged and will be rigged? No, but that certainly is the way to bet, especially since really nothing has changed at all on that score. And more importantly, it's also the way not to be fooled. We're told in Scripture, one of my favorites from Matthew 24, see that you are not deceived. Be not deceived. He says it several different ways in a number of different places, and it's definitely advice for our times. The one thing we literally know for sure is that free and honest elections are not on the table. You know you can't trust the machines, and you know you can't trust the reporting. So what the heck is the issue here? And between deep fakes and push polls and propaganda and all the other things that are going on, even the analysis of them is also going to be just as fake, just as rigged, just as manipulated, and just as bogus. Do not be fooled. Withdraw consent. I'm not saying don't vote. Vote if you want to. You can wish upon a star. You can keep on sacrificing children to Molech and asking him for a different result. You can avoid stepping on cracks. You can avoid walking under ladders. You can do all kinds of superstitious stuff. And ultimately, they all represent, if you think about it, a form of idolatry to a whole different god. And maybe that's a big part of the problem. And when I think back, folks, about all the different times and ways that I've referred to election rigging and the propaganda that surrounds it and the literal coercion that prevents people from talking about it, I can't help but hearken back to a story that I did just a few weeks ago now, which seems ever so prescient given what, as we might have expected, we've now seen play out. Listen to this story from late October of this year. And that, sadly, leads me to this story, and it truly is disgusting. This one comes from the Daily Mail out of the UK. They seem to think it's not only not disgusting, but their banner headline picture tells you just how excited they are to be reporting it. Trump's lawyer's guilty tears, it says, concerning Jenna Ellis, the former lawyer for Donald Trump, who broke down in tears, hardy har, they're thrilled about it, and pled guilty in a Georgia so-called court where she, the former president, and others have now been charged by the deep state swamp critters with trying to overturn the rigged 2020 election. Yep, they stole it fair and square, and how dare you say otherwise? We'll show you what happens when the victors rewrite history. In a deal with prosecutors, it says Ellis, age 38, pled guilty to one count of aiding and abetting false statements und writings. But she had been facing more serious charges of violating the state's anti-racketeering law by the very mobsters who are running the state now. Isn't that ironic? Ellis avoided jail, it says, and was sentenced to 5 years probation, $5,000 fine, and 100 hours of community service. She was also ordered to, oh, you know this, don't you, write an apology letter to the idiots in Georgia who will actually believe it. Unless you think I'm talking about all of them, folks, obviously we're not. Most people know that this is an absolute farce, and I suspect the vast majority are as disgusted as those of us listening here are. At least I hope so, and I pray that that's the case. And you know what? I gotta add this. I really hope she goes out and gets rape counseling after this, because unless she truly completed the re-education camp, she's gonna need it. Back to the Orwellian propaganda here from the Daily Mail's Ministry of Truth. And she read that statement after pleading guilty in the election case. Oh, by the way, she didn't end it the way she should have. I love Big Brother. But this is so disgusting. Well, no, it's beyond disgusting, folks. I do have to read at least one sentence or so, as much as I can tolerate without throwing up. I believe in and I value election integrity, she was coerced into saying. And if I knew then what I know now, yeah, and we know what that means now, don't we? Try to smile through the stripes, Jenna. I would have declined to represent Donald Trump in these post-election challenges. She could have at least said, thank you, sir, may I have another, somewhere in there. All right, that leads me to this story that I think really summarizes several of the things that we're trying to put together here today. This comes from Zero Hedge, of course, but originally written by Jonathan Turley, former professor of constitutional law at Harvard, back before they went completely woke. It was also up on Fox.com, and it concerns a poll released last week, he says, showing that an increasing number of citizens, and I would say increasingly dumbed down, no doubt, but not quite enough anyway, have now lost faith in our, quote, constitutional system and now view violence as warranted to silence any of those who hold opposing views. It is, he says, a crisis of faith that represents the greatest possible threat to our republic. And hey, see, he even knew at least once upon a time what form of government we were supposed to have. You got that right. This loss of faith, he continues, and fealty, constitutes one of the greatest crises that our nation has faced since its foundation. And I think on that score, he's pretty darn close to the mark. Here's the column, it says, beginning with that recent poll that he called startling, showing a majority of voters not only view the opposing party as a threat to the nation, but that it justifies violence in order to combat their agenda. And here's the sad truth, folks. At least half of them are actually right. What the poll doesn't explain, that I certainly need to right up front here, is that it's not about justifying violence outright. It's about recognizing that when they come and use violence against you to steal from you, to kill you, to destroy your children and your lives, then in fact, that is exactly why the Second Amendment was put in place to begin with. Back to the piece. The poll by University of Virginia Center for Politics shows a nation at war with itself, he says. 52% of Biden supporters, and you know right there, if they actually support that cretin, what does that say about their own intelligence? Well, they say Republicans are now a threat to the American way of life that they're pushing, and we know what that includes, while 47% of Trump supporters say the same about the far-left Democrats. And are there any other kind nowadays? One thing's for sure, not in the swamp, folks. Among the Biden supporters, he continues, 41% now believe violence is justified to stop Republicans from achieving their goals. All right, I got to insert this. Quick aside here. That used to be called Truth, Justice, and the American Way, if you've ever seen the introduction to the old Superman TV show. Now the left, the very same left, derisively scoffs at that very set of words. while an almost identical percentage, 38%, of Trump supporters embrace violence to stop the communist left. And he didn't put it that way, but I will. Not surprisingly, and here's where he begins to drop the ball, folks, but at least it's educational. Not surprisingly, many of these people have lost faith in democracy. Do I even need to say it? Regular listeners here know. Such democracies, as Madison wrote, have been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Yep, case in point, right here, plan out. Anyway, some 31% of Trump supporters believe that the nation should explore alternative forms of government. Hey, how about the one that was actually put in there in genuine print? And I guess the sad point here, folks, is that a lot of Trump supporters don't understand what that form of government was supposed to be either. While roughly a quarter, 24%, of Biden-Fuhrer supporters question the viability of democracy. And these idiots don't even know what a senile guy looks like, much less what the Constitution says about democracy. And as listeners here know, it's not in there. Not once, not anywhere. But in spite of that, this sentence really nails it. Faith, says Professor Turley, is the one thing that no system of government can exist or do without. Without faith in the underlying values of a constitutional system, authority rests on a mix of coercion and capitulation. Right, Jenna? For years, he says, I've written about this growing loss of faith and how it's been fueled by our intellectual and political elites. In the echo chamber of news and socialist media, citizens constantly hear how the opposing party is composed of traitors and how the constitutional system works to protect enemies of the people. Viewers can now get a steady diet of figures like MSNBC commentator Elie Mystel, who called the U.S. Constitution trash and argued that we should just dump it. Well, I guess that's a done deal now, isn't it? He goes on to describe example after example, from Columbia University's so-called professor of law, Rosa Brooks, to the New York Times, to the evil Pocahontas, Liz Warren of Massachusetts, to the hatefully anti-constitutional Chuckie Schumer of New York, to the occasional Cortex itself. He even rightfully criticizes Donald Trump, who's demonstrated no great familiarity with the document. No wonder, he says, the Constitution is now viewed as a threat to our nation rather than the very thing that defines us. It's designed to restrain the majority and protect those who are least popular in our society. And in the end, he says, correctly, a Constitution remains a covenant between citizens and their government, but also between each other as citizens. And it demands a leap of faith, a commitment that despite our differences, we will defend the rights of our neighbors. He notes the Constitution isn't particularly poetic. It was written by the ultimate wonk, James Madison, and it spent as much time on not only what divided us, but recognized the danger of factions and created a system to bring such divisions to the surface where they could be addressed rather than fester. The problem is, have we now reached a time when things that divide us will now overcome what unites us? This isn't the first age of rage, he notes. History is full of it. Remember what Thomas Jefferson said about John Adams and the Alien and Sedition Acts? Correctly, your host notes. Turley remembers that back in 1867, John Stuart Mill warned that all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And while your host certainly agrees with that, folks, I have to close by noting that if those so-called good men are utterly ignorant of what the real truth is, what the real law is, they won't know what to do. And therein lies a big part of the problem. Sadly, far too many Americans are just plain ignorant and proud of it. Thanks for being with us today, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.